The Syrian government forces have entered the flashpoint northern city of Manbij for the first time in 6 years after the country's Kurdish militia publicly appealed to Damascus for help in the face of the imminent threat of an attack by Turkey. Iran and Russia welcomed the return of Kurdish territories in Syria to the control of President Bashar al-Assad's government. The Turkish president says that his country has no business in Manbij if Kurdish forces leave the area. However, in a contradictory announcement, Turkey's defense ministry said Kurdish militants have no authority to invite the Syrian army into the city. This development comes after U.S. President Donald Trump's decision earlier this month to withdraw American troops stationed in northern Syria and a dash by Arab countries to seek rapprochement with Damascus. What do the Syrian government gains mean for Damascus and for its foes? Stay tuned for tonight's debate.
The Syrian army has entered the city of Manbij for the first time in 6 years after the Kurdish YPG militants appealed to Damascus for help in the face of an imminent threat of attack by Turkey.
Based on the army and the armed forces' total commitment to its role in implementing sovereignty on every inch of the Syrian Arab Republic, and in response to the calls of the people of Manbij, the armed forces announced that members of the Syrian Arab army have entered Manbij and have raised the flag of the Syrian Arab Republic in it.
The deployment creates a buffer zone arching across northern Syria that fully separates the Turkish army from the Kurds. It came after U.S. President Donald Trump's surprise announcement last week that he will withdraw all U.S. forces from Manbij. Turkey has threatened an assault on Manbij to drive out the Kurdish militias, which it regards as terrorists. Following the developments, the Turkish president dismissed the Syrian government's action as an attempt to use psychological warfare. He, however, said Ankara has no business in Manbij if YPG militants leave the area.
In the current situation, we are still supporting the integrity of Syrian soil. These areas belong to Syria. Once the terrorist organizations leave the area, we will have nothing left to do there.
The Kurds have issued a statement welcoming the government's advance. Russia and Iran have both described the deployment as a positive step. According to some accounts, the Syrian army may be advancing into more Kurdish areas in the coming days and weeks.
This is also a very important news. We could be seeing perhaps the Syrian army entering to more and more areas in the coming couple of weeks in the eastern part of the Euphrates River, where Turkey was planning to carry out a military operation. It seems that this is a kind of an agreement that both the Syrian government and the Kurds have agreed on in order to block the way in front of Turkey from carrying out any military operation.
Nearly 8 years into Syria's deadly conflict, the move marks another key step in President Bashar al-Assad's drive to reassert control over the country. Damascus is also making progress in the diplomatic arena with Thursday's reopening of the Emirati embassy in Damascus. Bahrain also announced it would reopen its mission in the Syrian capital. Other Persian Gulf states who supported terrorist groups in their fight against the Syrian government are expected to shift their positions and normalize ties with Damascus. Diplomatic sources say the Arab League is moving to readmit Syria into the organization. After years of war, the Syrian government, supported by Iran, Russia, and Lebanon's Hezbollah, has regained control over most of Syria. The Syrian army's gains gathered pace this year with the defeat of the last big militants' enclaves near Damascus and the recovery of the southwestern region. And now, after its victory, it has directed its attention at a speedy consolidation of its sovereignty over its soil and forcing its foes to seek political rapprochement with the government in Damascus.
On tonight's debate, we've got founder of American Institute for Foreign Policy, Mr. Michael Lane, joining us from Washington, D.C., and also director of Eurasia Future, Mr. Adam Gary, who's joining us from the British capital, London. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with our guest in Washington, Mr. Lane. Talk to us about the significance of the recent development in Manbij. It can turn out to be a major game changer in the bigger picture of the Syrian conflict, can it?
It certainly has the possibility of being a major game changer. This all started, of course, with President Trump's surprising tweet last week, where he announced that the United States would be pulling out of Syria in a very, very fast manner. Nobody really knew where that came from, but after some discussions with people and our allies, perhaps, and his advisors, that pulling out fast or rapid became a slow pullout. We're not sure what that change means. A slow pullout could mean that President Trump is rethinking it. He could mean that we're only going to pull some of the troops out. It could mean that we're going to continue to partner with the Kurds. We don't know, but it was serious enough that it caused Secretary Defense Secretary Jim Mattis to tender his resignation over the issue. Well, now we have a situation where, as a result of President Trump's announced decision, and it's still not clear what that announced decision is, but as a result of that, apparently the Kurds have invited the Syrians into Manbij to provide a buffer zone between them and the Turks, something that more or less de facto the United States was providing. We don't know how far into Manbij the Syrians are. We don't know really what they're going to do when they get there. But if the Syrians stay there, and if they deploy into defensive positions, and if one way or another they are able to persuade the Turks not to attack through against the Kurds in that sector of Syria, then that's a whole new ballgame in that area. We were expecting to see a rather dramatic change of the ballgame when the United States pulled out, but now, or if the United States pulled out, or when the United States pulled out, but now that there's allegedly some movement or some agreement or some discussion that the Syrians will fill the vacuum rather than the Turks filling the vacuum, it's a whole new ballgame.
Let's bring in Mr. Gary from London. Give us your thoughts on the Manbij developments and whether you think this could be a significant step for Damascus in reestablishing its sovereignty over all of the Syrian territory.
Well, I think a lot of the early reports we heard jumped the gun. In fact, just before walking into this studio, I read from a Russian source, no less, which has no reason to embellish one way or another on this one, that the SAA troops are well short of Manbij city center, though they are indeed in the region, and that they won't be progressing forward anytime soon. One can assume from that report and from the source that Russia has told the SAA to put on the brakes so as not to encroach on any areas in which the Turkish armed forces and their allies are going to be fighting. It's in Russia's interest, of course, to separate the Turkish armed forces and the Syrian Arab army as much as possible, because it's the imperative of all of the three Astana members, Russia, Iran, and Turkey, for the situation to de-escalate rather than re-escalate. So I think that the fact that they put the brakes on is important, and I think the message we heard from Ankara earlier is also important, insofar as President Erdogan reiterated that it's not really any more a question of which flag is planted in which part of northern Syria, so far as Turkey's concerned, so long as the YPG-PKK terror organization is either clipped or neutralized. That's the Turkish priority. That is in keeping with the Astana agreement. And of course, we have to remember that while Turkey and Damascus aren't speaking, the Syrian government has stamped, given their stamp of approval to all of the statements issued from the Astana trio. So that shows that even in the worst of diplomatic circumstances, diplomacy is working. It's obviously a drawn-out process, but it's functional nevertheless. That's more than a lot of people could have assumed even a year ago.
Mr. Gary, some are predicting a vacuum with the exit of the American forces. Our guest in Washington, Mr. Lane, also alluded to that. Others are saying that the leaving of the U.S. forces will turn out to make everything much smoother. How are you viewing the ramifications of this U.S. troop pullout?
Well, I'm viewing it the way that those in the region are. Turkey has welcomed it insofar as Turkey can play a much more constructive role in the region than America could, being a member of the Astana group, being a regional power rather than a power from another continent. So Russia has cautiously welcomed it, saying that they'll believe it when they see it. One can understand why. Iran's view has generally been positive. Damascus's view has been positive. One of the only countries that remains an aggressor towards Syria and its people, the Israeli regime, reacted negatively. So I think all of that speaks for itself.
Mr. Lane, Washington's stance on Syria, along with its allies, was always the removal of Bashar al-Assad and regime change in Syria. That policy, it diluted as time passed, and now it seems to be completely off the table. This must be considered as a defeat for U.S.'s Syria policy.
First, let me underscore one more thing that I left out of my first answer. There are also very credible reports that the U.S. still has its own forces in Manbij, which lends additional credibility to the fact or to the reports that the Syrian forces have stopped short of entering the city. Now, as far as the policy of the United States, where the departure of Assad was necessary, that goes back years. That was an Obama-era policy. He announced that early on. He stuck with it through his entire presidency. And there was some thought maybe that President Trump might not continue that policy. But in short order, within a couple months, it was made very clear that the Trump administration was sticking with the policy, that any final solution was going to have to result in the departure of President Assad for the presidency of Syria. That's all been pretty bogus since about 3 years ago, when the Russians entered the conflict militarily and provided Assad with everything he needed to stay in power. You might have your policy as articulated, you might have your desires, you might even hope that you get somewhere at the peace table, the conference table, but the simple fact of the matter is the facts on the ground dictated that President Assad was going to stay in power as long as he was in favor with President Putin of Russia. As long as Russia continues to play an outsized role in the future of Syria, which it will continue to do, then Assad is not going anyplace, and the stated objective of the United States for a regime change is about 3 or 4 years out of date.
Mr. Gary, Trump's policy on Syria has a ton of opposition in the U.S. as well. Why do you think he made that final decision?
Well, it's not a matter of what I think.
Excellent
it's a
question.
Matter of what the world knows.
It is a very...
President...
I'm sorry.
Okay, Mr. Gary.
Oh, sorry, I don't know who that was for.
No, it's for Mr. Gary. Ms. Lane, we'll get back to you after that.
Right. Well, it's not a matter of what I think. The world already knows the answer to that. Shortly after President Erdogan of Turkey spoke to President Trump of the United States, it was determined by Donald Trump that there was no point in the U.S. essentially sitting there like sitting ducks when Turkey had said quite forcefully that so long as the U.S. is allied with the YPG-PKK terror group in the region, Turkey will come in, irrespective of a U.S. president. Now, of course, no Turkish troops would want to fire on American troops, and that was made quite clear, but it still makes for a less than ideal situation when you have the two biggest military powers in NATO fighting over a terrorist group that one country wants to neutralize and that another country has used as a battlefield ally. So the decision we now know was made at that point in time, and over and above that, in Donald Trump's campaign in 2016, he did say that he wanted to favor a more non-interventionist, some would even say a more anti-war approach than the total failures that were Obama and Bush. So a lot of people didn't believe that, some people did. In this case, circumstance has actually allowed him to execute what may well have been a policy he wanted to anyway, but the proximate cause was that telephone conversation between the American and Turkish presidents.
Mr. Lane, would you like to add anything to the issue?
Well, certainly it's a very controversial decision in the United States. Domestically, there are a great number of people, very influential, who think that President Trump made the wrong decision here. I already mentioned that his defense secretary, Jim Mattis, resigned over this particular issue. There were others who resigned as well. There are any number of members of the United States Senate, both Republican and Democrat, who have vocally criticized President Trump on this particular issue. You know, he campaigned, as was correctly mentioned, back in 2016 on ending the involvement in Syria and bringing the troops home. But it was by no means a major part of his campaign. It was not the reason he won the presidency. It was sort of one of those ancillary issues. Well, now here he is, for whatever reason, and I also believe that his phone call with the Turkish president was the thing that sealed the deal. But here he is, keeping that campaign promise from 2016, when very few people expected him to keep it and very few people wanted him to keep it. We'll see where it comes out. But again, the fact that he's already backpedaling from his original tweet, which was, we are going to be out of there and out of Syria fast, to now it's going to be a slow, coordinated departure from Syria, leads me to believe that there are additional discussions going on within the Trump administration that may represent a ultimate change in whatever the final policy there will be.
Mr. Geer, we also have to think about a Turkey in this issue. Observers are saying that the Turkish president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, must tread lightly as the security of multiple parties can be at risk if any uncalculated action is taken. Where does this leave Turkey in the equation?
Well, I don't know who came up with that statement, but Turkey, Iran, and Russia cooperate all the time in the Astana format, and it's been the only format that's been successful in de-escalating the war. Everything that was tried before the introduction of that format failed. Everything that's happened since the introduction of that format has either succeeded overtly or is in the process of progressing in a healthy way. So I totally disagree with the sentiments of that statement. I think that the Russian, Turkish, an Iranian partnership is an incredibly strong and incredibly fruitful one.
All right, and Mr. Lane, where do you think Turkey fits in the equation here?
Well, Turkey's trying to expand its influence and power. Mr. Erdogan has had a desire to play a much larger role, perhaps even ultimately an outsized role in the region. His country is ideally geographically located in between the East and the West. It's a desire and a goal of his since he assumed the presidency to exert more influence. So his role in the Astana coalition is certainly very, very helpful and influential. The Turks and the Syrians don't really talk, but nonetheless, President Erdogan has managed to insert himself into the process where he's one of the big three making the decisions as to what's going to happen. Congratulations to Mr. Erdogan for, you know, leapfrogging decades of effort and putting himself in a position where he's a much more significant player today than anybody ever thought he would be.
And Mr. Lane, are the Kurds seeing this as a betrayal by the U.S.?
Sorry, who's that for?
Mr. Lane.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I think there are a lot of Americans who look at this as a betrayal of the Kurds by the U.S., particularly, most significantly, as I mentioned, Secretary Mattis, who submitted his resignation over the decision. There are other people. I believe there will be an effort in the United States Senate when they reconvene next week to try and influence the Trump administration on this. Look, the Kurds have been our partners on and off for a good period of time. Turkey has been our ally through NATO, but at best has been an inconsistent ally in terms of some of the things that we really, really need. President Trump apparently looked at this and said, okay, Turkey is a major force. Turkey is someone that we really, really want on our side. And he was willing to sell the Kurds out in order to curry favor with the Turks and see if there could be a long-range arrangement there. We'll see if that happens. Remember, it was just months ago when the United States and Turkey were at each other's throats over some other issues. So it remains to be seen whether President Trump's strategy of trading the Kurds for the Turks is a long-term win. I have my doubts.
Mr. Geer in London, Arab countries, as we know, are set to restart their ties with Damascus. This is as far distance as they can be taking from the U.S.'s stance and Saudi Arabia's stance regarding the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. You put one and one together and you get a loss for Washington and its allies. You get a big victory, a W for Damascus and its allies, Iran, Russia, and Hezbollah, isn't it?
Well, you'd have to have a heart of stone not to laugh at the elasticity of in the concept of loyalty within the minds of the major Arab leaders, and particularly among the leaders of the wealthier Arab nations. The same people on whose media channels every anti-Assad activist and soldier and fighter and militant were on for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Now they're tripping over each other, trying to cut the golden ribbon of their reopened embassies in Damascus. First you had the Emiratis, now you have the Bahrainis. You have reports that the Kuwaitis are coming as well, and of course all of it is orchestrated by the Saudis. It really is one of the few moments of light entertainment, frankly, in a war that's been tragic from beginning to what hopefully will be the end. But the reason behind this commedia dell'arte of the same Arabs whom Assad represented the devil for up until a few months ago, and now he's sort of their comrade, this pseudo-Arab nationalism that's repeating itself in a farce Saudi-led incarnation. The idea is that Riyadh is petrified, not only that Iran has shored up support among its natural supporters in Iraq, in Lebanon, in Syria, in Palestine, but that Turkey is now top dog among the Sunni Muslim opinion, not just in the wider Ummah, but in much of the Arab world. And Saudi Arabia's star has fallen in terms of its soft power, and that was a true statement even when Jamal Khashoggi was a living, breathing journalist. And so the Saudis are now scrambling, and they're flying the flag, ironically, of the same ideology they fought for the last 70 years, Arab nationalism, in an attempt to dislodge Turkish and Iranian influence from northern part of the wider Arab world.
All right, we're running short of time. We've got time for one last question. 30 seconds each, if you may. With Syria, there's always a question of Israel as well. Surely the Israelis aren't too happy with the U.S.'s announcement and the recent Syrian gains, both in the battlefields and the political front. Mr. Lane, where does Israel fall into play in this scenario? 30 seconds, please.
Well, notwithstanding President Trump's willingness to trade one ally for another in the Syrian conflict, I think the 70-plus year arrangement that we've had with Israel is something that's enduring and long-lasting, and I believe that President Trump is committed to that. So he is not likely to do anything that changes that, although by changing the map and changing the geopolitics in the Middle East, it may make being Israel's ally more difficult. It remains to be seen. Finally, let me just say that I think the rush to Damascus and the rush to normalize ties and things like that, it looks like it's big in the beginning, but it's going to be a very deliberate step-by-step process. It's not going to be done overnight.
All right, Mr. Geary, your final thoughts?
Well, of course, the only country in the region whose increasingly hysterical leaders are supporting a breakaway YPG-PKK statelet are, of course, those in the Zionist regime. And they will resort possibly to anything in order to drag the U.S. back into the war. We've seen them just days ago using civilian flights as shields for their jets. If that doesn't say everything that's wicked about that regime and how no unethical options are off the table, I don't know what does. God help anyone who's on the receiving end of Zionist aggression.
All right, allow me to thank my guest, founder of American Institute for Foreign Policy, Mr. Michael Lane, joining us from Washington, D.C., and also director of Eurasia Future, Adam Geary, joining us from London. Thank you for contributing to the program, and also a special thanks to you, our guests, for staying with us here on tonight's debate. It's goodbye for now.